Hello, I'm Steve Wiggins, and this is the second podcast from the Sex and Violence in the Ancient World blog. Today's topic is going to be the alphabet, or if you prefer, the history of writing. And I'd like to start off with a popular quote from Isaac Newton. Isaac Newton once said, or so he's attributed as saying, "If I have seen further, it is only by standing on the shoulders of giants." And I got to thinking about this the other day. It made me think about this incredible stack of giants that must exist. First of all, Isaac Newton himself being a giant, and then all of the many, many people who've built on his work since then. And so I've got this whole image in my head of a series of giants. And one of those giants, not my personal favorite, but one of those giants is perhaps Michael Jackson. And the reason I think of this is because of his childhood prodigy days, and I'll admit to being just a couple years younger than Michael was. And the Michael Jackson that I think of is not the one that became a rather bizarre adult, but the child prodigy who sang songs like Rockin' Robin and Ben. Ben was a song that I always really liked because it was the name of my older brother, and it was only when I actually became a teenager that I realized he was singing it about a rat. It's, of course, the theme song for the sequel to the horror movie Willard. So it was the theme song for Ben, who was the name of the largest rat in the first movie. But one of his songs was ABC 123, which involves, of course, the alphabet. And so if we go backwards in our stack of giants from Michael Jackson to Isaac Newton, we'd have to go back even further, way back further than Isaac Newton, to get back to this forgotten giant who invented the alphabet. I think it's one of the ironies of history that we don't know who invented the alphabet. We're not even sure where it came from. But to get a sense of it, I think we have to start with the idea about writing itself, where writing began. Again, there's no, obviously, no written records to tell us this story. It has to be pieced together from artifacts. And the best evidence that we have indicates that people used to write things down literally by making little symbols out of clay. I'm not talking about clay tablets. That came along later. So that, for example, if you had some kind of material good, say cattle or grain, surplus in grain or something like that, that you would represent it, or it would be represented for you, by somebody making a little clay token of this object. And the reason they made these clay tokens was to indicate your possession of something. Maybe think of it kind of like a receipt. So that when people would get together in ancient communities, they would take turns bringing things to the ancient potluck. And if you had already brought your share of material, they would make a mark on a clay tablet with this three-dimensional clay token, and it'd leave a distinct shape impression. And that would be your receipt to demonstrate that you had brought something to the party. I brought the beer last time, it's your turn, that kind of thing. So people would use this system, and after a while, somebody got the idea that, hey, you know, instead of carrying around these tokens all the time, we could simply use the clay tablet on which the token is impressed as kind of a container to hold the tokens in. So they came up with the idea of an envelope. It's kind of funny to our way of thinking, but the envelope was actually invented before the letter that goes in it. But that's exactly what it was. So they would write things down on these clay envelopes, and then they'd stick the tokens inside and seal it shut. So you had the proof that you had the actual tokens inside this clay envelope, and on the outside was an impression of the object itself, along with maybe a series of dots to indicate quantity. So kind of like a receipt. And we're not sure when, but somewhere along the line, somebody figured out that you didn't have to have an actual object inside if you had a representation on the outside. All you needed was a clay tablet with an impression of the object and an indication of the quantity, and so you wouldn't even need the envelope. And at that point, somebody invented some kind of pictographic writing. And we're not sure exactly how it developed or exactly where, but it seems somewhere in the Middle East, in the area probably of the Mesopotamian general region or something like that. The reason we know about these things is that the clay tokens have been found and clay envelopes have been found. So we know that they use them, but the exact use is, of course, reconstructed. And so they've been able to figure out that these were various steps along the track of how people learn to write. The next major innovation was trying to figure out how to write a language so that you would have the same symbol with an abstract value, a phonetic value, if you will, so that you could always mean the same thing by it. And if you wrote that particular symbol, it always meant the same sound. Now, to us, it seems entirely obvious that A, B, C works really well because we're so used to it. But it wasn't self-evident to people in the ancient world that A, B, C or alphabetic writing was the most obvious way to convey an idea. The earliest writing systems that we have any great knowledge of are syllabic, and that is to say each symbol represents a syllable. So you've got a symbol that represents SA and a symbol that represents AS. And so they're usually a vowel consonant combination, and these were used for thousands of years. They were used up even concurrently with the alphabet up until the beginning of the Christian era. There were still people writing in cuneiform with syllabic systems, even though it's very clunky and somewhat hard to work with. The reason that it eventually did die out was that syllabic writing requires a huge number of symbols, because if you are writing something alphabetically, you only need about 30 symbols before you can represent most sounds that you can make. Obviously, there's sounds that people make even today that don't have alphabetic representations. You see writers doing this all the time when they try to imitate sounds that people are making by spelling it out. But for the most part, what we use in our daily speech can be represented by 30 approximations or thereabouts. Our own alphabet, of course, has 26 letters. Ancient Hebrew alphabet has 22. The Ugaritic alphabet has 30. So there's just usually around that number before you start realizing that there's a lot of redundancy built in if you have a lot more symbols. So eventually, the idea caught on that you could represent an individual sound or letter or phoneme by a symbol. And that was where we get the concept of the alphabet. Where this happened and when it happened again is a matter of debate. The conventional wisdom always said that alphabetic writing began in Syria, or in that part of the world, Syria, Lebanon, that area. And the earliest exemplars that we would have of a fully operational alphabetic system were the Ugaritic tablets, or something similar to them. Ugarit is a city located in the northern coast of Syria. It's an extinct city. It's been defunct, if you will, for over 3,000 years now. And the people who lived there had a writing system that was cuneiform. That is to say, they used a triangular-shaped stylus of some sort and pressed it into wet clay. So it wasn't writing like we think of it as writing with a pen or a pencil. But the cuneiform writing was alphabetic, and this seems to have been a first. They seem to have been the ones who came up with the idea that by using approximately 30 different symbols, you could represent most of what you wanted to say. And this led to another innovation, which is to say that writing began to follow the patterns of speech. And that, to us, again, it seems entirely obvious. But if you can imagine in your mind being in a world where people didn't have this preconceived idea that your writing could follow after the direction of your spoken language, that really is an innovation. And it takes some thought to come up with that. As far as the actual writing goes, and this is more of maybe an impression on the part of a modern-day reader of the material, is that the language is highly stilted or formalized when you read in syllabic material. Now, that doesn't mean that when you are writing alphabetically that it's naturally going to be a nice flow and it's going to follow speech patterns and such. That develops over time. But it seems that writing, when it was first done, had a kind of a formal pattern, not strict, but a formal pattern that it followed. And as time went on, people began to realize that they could use their speaking patterns to write down ideas and concepts. Now, again, this is an informal sort of survey, and it's not a scientific survey of how writing started, because we simply don't know. But we do get the sense that very shortly after people began to write, that the idea really didn't catch on right away to the point that we'd like to think today. We have the idea in our minds that people read and write. It's a recreational activity. Chances are any of you who are listening to this podcast have the ability to read or write. Otherwise, it'd be pretty hard to find it on the web. So reading and writing is taken for granted, but the best studies that we have seem to indicate that up until fairly recent times, say even into the early Middle Ages, the literacy rates in the world were about 5%. And what that means is that most people couldn't read or write. And even if they had access to books, they couldn't read them themselves. So this idea is really a modern idea, and we're looking back and trying to understand ancient writing systems based on a completely different viewpoint, one in which writing is very common. The phonetic alphabet that they developed in Ugarit is remarkably similar to our own alphabet. It's not exactly the same, but it is the one that was the basis for later alphabets such as the Aramaic and Phoenician alphabets that were borrowed by the Greeks. So, for example, the letter A at the start was actually not a consonant per se in Ugaritic or in Semitic languages because they don't write their vowels. But that symbol of the letter A, which stood for a glottal stop, which is simply a stopping of breath when you're speaking. The classic example is an English person saying the word bottle for bottle when they get to the T's and stop speaking for just a breath. That's a glottal stop. That was considered a consonant in ancient world, and it becomes the letter A in modern speech simply by default of being first, for the first symbol in the alphabet. That innovation came by the Greeks. The Greeks were the first to represent the vowels as part of their alphabet. So as far as the origin of the alphabet itself is concerned, tradition had it that the alphabet started somewhere in the area of Syria. Fairly recently, there have been some discoveries made in the area around Egypt, and even a brief look at Wikipedia would indicate that current thinking has tended to think that the Egyptians were the first people to come up with an alphabet, or at least an alphabetic script. The discoveries were made at a place with the rather unusual name of Wadi el-Hol, and they were a series of, shall we say, pictographic signs. There are not a definitive number so that we can come up with an alphabet as such, but they seem to represent a form of writing in which there are a limited number of symbols. And when a linguist looks at a writing system that has a limited number of symbols like that, their thoughts automatically go to alphabet. Back in my student days, I actually approached my advisor, John C.L. Gibson, who was a very well-known linguist in his day, about the possibility of working with something called the proto-Sinaitic inscriptions. The proto-Sinaitic inscriptions are some of these proto-alphabetical texts. And he advised me to stay well clear of them. I was trying to remember this morning his exact words. I do recall that the word devil was in there somewhere. I'm not sure exactly how he phrased it, but he basically was indicating that you don't want to deal with those because nobody really understands the proto-Sinaitic inscriptions. And then in the early part of the 2000s, another set of these inscriptions, as I say, was discovered at Wadi el-Hol, and a very dashing gentleman who teaches at Yale, somebody by the name of John Darnell, presented this in a story that made the front page of the New York Times, actually, about the origin of the alphabet being in Egypt as opposed to the traditional Syria. I'm not sure exactly what I believe about that. Again, it's not a matter of any kind of defined fact yet where the alphabet came from. It seems likely, though, that the idea originated somewhere in either Syria or Egypt, somewhere in that part of the world. Until we can get some really definitive evidence, all we can say is that somewhere in that general region of the Levant, someone came up with the idea of writing alphabetically. And that's changed the history of the world ever since then. One of the things I tell my students is that the most important invention that people have ever come up with was the alphabet. And the reason for that is because if you stop to think again about Isaac Newton's statement about standing on the shoulders of giants, the reason that he could stand on the shoulder of giants, as anyone who's ever tried to move knowledge ahead has done, is because of writing. Until we developed a system where a large number of people could learn to write, knowledge was limited to really what you could learn in a lifetime and what you might manage to pass on to your kids. And so if you think of our society as being purely oral, so that your learning, my learning would have been passed on from our parents, it would be a very limiting kind of way of passing knowledge on. And so progress was very slow. And we can see that represented in the archaeological record, because progress in new inventions was very slow until recent times. Now it's so fast, it's a blur for most of us. But it's because you can write down something and then somebody else can read it and move on from there without having to go back and learn all the way from the beginning. And this invention, I think, places the developer of the alphabet among the giants, if not the most gigantic giant of all, when it comes to human inventions. And if it weren't for the development of the alphabet, we wouldn't be listening to a podcast at this moment. It's something that has completely revolutionized the human way of thinking and behaving.